I just realized, Addison, that it is Friday the 13th.
So it is.
2024. Yes, it has been a fairly nondescript day so far for me. How about you?
I can't say anything spooky has happened on my end so far. Just normal Friday for me.
Well, that, I guess we can look at that one of two ways. We can either say, yeah, nothing to see here. Let's move along. Or we can say we're due because we've already made it like 16 hours into Friday. We have not been tormented by any spirits whatsoever. So
yet.
Yeah, yet. Yes. We're going to choose to look at it on the positive side here and just say good afternoon to you. And thank you for joining us here on the Steve Hallstrom Show. I am the host of the program, Addison Loger. Our producer keeps us on the tracks, and we appreciate his efforts greatly. He's going to leave me today, however, the last half hour of the show, I understand. Apparently, you got something better to do. Well, and so, fine, I won't pout too hard or too long about it.
Well, it's not how I would have worded it.
Well, it's just...
my services are needed elsewhere. Yeah,
apparently so. Apparently so. Oh, it's all good. I was informed about this earlier and said it'll work out just fine. But we're going to be here with you one way or another until 6 o'clock tonight. And we got a lot of stuff piled up in the show stack for today. And I am very intrigued with a number of the stories that I've seen here and very much look forward to getting into them with you here today. The Steve Hallstrom Studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our good friends at probably the only place that I would go if I had issues with a driveway or concrete slab or anything like that, Precision Concrete Cutters in Ramjack North. They know what you do, and that is that your home is your greatest asset. Protect it, keep it in good shape, maintain it, and make it better. Go to pccnd.com to learn more, and they'll tell you how they can help you out. If you'd like to call us, we'd be glad to have you do that today on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. They've recently expanded and can get you in fast. They now offer counseling, occupational therapy, physical therapy, and a nurse practitioner. Make an appointment. Get in this week at valleychristian.co. All right. I am glad today that Addison and our operations chief, Jeff Thaden, have been doing some testing of the video cameras in our studio with hopes that we can begin streaming this program or lift clips out for social media or whatever. I'm glad that you guys are not experimenting today because I look like I got into a fight with Mike Tyson about 30 years ago. I was today over at the Fargo Sports Complex that Sanford has built on the south side of town. And it's a wonderful building. And you can go there for free and jog or walk or whatever on the track they have on the second level. So did that today, got done, and being that it's a chilly morning, I said, let's go ahead and start up the car. And so I tried to my remote starter, but it was too wussy to get my car going from the distance I was at. And so I went out into the hallway, top of the stairs, tried to get nothing, went down the stairs on the first level. Now, at this point, I'm near the entrance to the place there, and still nothing. I'm like, come on. I'm like a 60-degree wedge away from my car. I'm very close to my vehicle, and still nothing is happening. So I turn, and I walk through a big door there. It's all glass. It's very, very fancy there. So I turn to walk through one of the open doors, big open doors, to get out of the lobby. Problem was, it was not an open door. It was just a very large and very clean window. And I smacked my face right into that door, or into the, well, I thought it was a door, right into that window. And it, the noise in my head sounded like, Addison's too young to remember what the Gong Show was, but those of you that are my age or a couple of years better will remember the Gong Show and the big cring. That is exactly what I heard when I headbutted that door. I was like, oh my gosh. And I was in the concussion protocol there for a minute because I was staggering around trying to get my wits about me. The poor guy sitting at the front desk, I was too embarrassed to turn back and like say, I'm all right, dude. I just was, you know, no, nothing to see here. I'm fine. So I finally then went a little further to the left where there was an open door. At this point, I was watching a little bit more. I thought I had gotten far enough along the wall there, turning from the bottom of the stairs to get through, and I needed to go a little bit further. So I finally then started my car. But then I turned around, went back inside because I left, you know, my wallet and my keys and my sweatshirt and all that stuff up in by the walking track. And so I'm walking up the stairs there, and nobody's like rushing to my aid. Thankfully, I'm embarrassed enough by this time. I walk up the stairs. I feel like I've got like a runny nose, except it's on the outside of my nose. I'm like, what's that? And then so I put my hand up on my nose, and my hand is full of blood. Absolutely full of blood. So I'm like, oh, great. Me being a doughhead means now I'm going to have to go to the ER and get stitches or whatever, and that's going to cost, right? This is how I think. You got to spend $5,000 now to go to the hospital or whatever. So I went into the bathroom and was able to take a wet paper towel, and it wasn't as bad as I thought. It looked like it was maybe going to stop bleeding, and it has thankfully stopped bleeding. So it's sort of scabbed over. I have no idea what I'll look like tomorrow morning. I could have – there's also an area on my forehead where I got a cut too, by the way, but that one was much more minor, thank goodness. This one is right on the bridge of my nose, and it feels like I got bopped right in the schnoz by somebody in a fight. So I went home, and Tracy took one look at me and said, what in the world happened to you? I said – you should see the other guy, you know, or something like that, and then proceeded to embarrass myself once again by having to recount the story to my wife, who was trying to be supportive and kind. But the things that make her laugh the hardest are like when people fall down. And so, of course, this was wheelhouse humor activity for my lovely bride. So I have a couple of people around the office have said, what happened to you today? But thankfully, most people have it because I just really don't want to tell the story again. But I figured it would be good fodder for the show and would get us all chuckling just a little bit. I've said many prayers. Thank you, Lord Jesus, that it did not turn into anything significant. And I have not had any short-term memory loss, as far as I can tell, or anything like that. So I think it was just a little bit embarrassing and a little bit bloody. So thankfully, we're okay here. But I make no promises as to what I may or may not forget during the course of the next 2 hours. So here we go. It is time for the 4 o'clock wrap, semi-automatic storylines as we go rapid fire to catch you up on a busy day. Lots of things have unfolded here today. We start with the almanac for today, December 13th, 2024. Yes, Friday the 13th, 2024. Don't believe in jinxes, so we're just going to have some fun with that. Average high for this day is 25. Average low is 8, and we did get up to what Dean was predicting, about 16 or so. So it feels pretty good compared to what we've had, but we are still well below average. Record high 48 in 2002, record low minus 28 in 1917. Sunrise this morning, 8:04, sunset 4:38. In the markets today, it was a down day pretty much across the board on Wall Street, but the NASDAQ was up a couple. Dow off 86, S&P 500 pretty much unchanged, NASDAQ up 23. So maybe all things considered, we pretty much just balanced it all out today. WTI crude oil up a dollar today at 71.09. First weekly gain in about 3 weeks there. Gold today down $43.50. Boy, gold is usually a very quiet commodity. But man, that's been a roller coaster ride here. Gold at $2,665. That's down $43 an ounce. Silver down 61 cents at $31. And Bitcoin today continues to stay above 100,000. I've been watching that carefully to see if it's going to have some sustained support above 100,000. If that happens and Bitcoin gets a little quiet and then starts to take off, it may be off to the races. That's what the technical analysis folks will tell you. So I'm kind of watching this to see what might happen there. AAA says average price of a gallon of regular unleaded gas unchanged from yesterday at 302. North Dakota, 282. Minnesota, 282. South Dakota, 282. We're all one big happy gas family here in the upper Midwest. All right, let's take a look at some of the news stories that are making headlines today. The Forum reports that a group of concerned residents and Fargo neighbors who are not happy about a sex offender treatment facility being placed where it's going to be placed has offered to buy that building. The group is operating as the South University Coalition. You may remember that in November, it was reported that the nonprofit group Stand had bought the old Cornerstone Bank location on 26th and University. Stand is short for Sex Offender Treatment and Assessment of North Dakota. Well, that got a lot of people concerned, because that location is very close to three elementary schools and a YWCA, but stand officials said that their options were limited. And so a group of people who say they are trying to protect children say that they are trying to buy that facility there. They are not giving any other details at this time, but a group of people wants to make that happen, and I think that's a good thing. We found out today that the suspect in the killing of the UHC CEO, United Healthcare, the CEO, did not even actually have insurance coverage from United Healthcare. All of this, and we were saying, oh, well, come on now. It's not the insurance company's fault if you got a bad surgery. But they weren't even his insurance company. So Luigi Mangione went after this guy, shot him dead, Brian Thompson. And they're saying, yeah, we never even covered him. So the story gets weirder on that one. Nine DFL Minnesota senators, including Moorhead's Rob Kupek, say they're creating a blue dog coalition to try to be moderate in the legislature. I remember Colin Peterson had the blue dog Democrats going in Washington, D.C. Well, looks like they're taking a page out of that book. My only comment to this is Senator Kupek has not necessarily governed as a moderate from what I can tell. So we may have to have Rob on the show and ask him, you know, is this are you turning over a new leaf? Because what you did in the 2023 session did not seem very moderate at all. So I just pass that along because that apparently is a thing. Minnesota Public Radio reports a recently released state budget data shows the counts and the costs of special education are rising dramatically in the state. Like, what isn't? The forecast projects that special ed services will rise to $1.7 billion by 2029. Historically, the costs have grown about 5 to 6% a year, but this year it's going to be more like 9%. Inflation and higher salaries. So, again, this inflation problem rears its ugly head again and again. WDAY Radio reports that North Dakota's three-person industrial commission has approved parts of the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline project. This is the one that would allow them to store carbon dioxide underground permanently. So now not only has the route been approved, but the underground storage has been approved as well. Sanford says we know now the top five baby names that were given to the youngins at Sanford Health this past year. For boys, Oliver was the most popular. For girls, it was Lainey. Boys number, not like Lainey the heating, plumbing, and air conditioning people, like the Lainey Wilson name, L-A-I-N-E-Y. You could do worse than name your child after good local business. But boys, 2 through 5, Henry, Liam, Theodore, and Brooks. I like Theodore. Brooks is kind of cool, too. And I like Henry. He's kind of old school. For girls, 2 through 5 were Amelia, Evelyn. I like Evelyn. My grandma's name was Evelyn. So make it a comeback. And then tie for 5th, Aurora, Charlotte, and Nora. All very fine names. Sanford has delivered 9,000 babies so far in 2024. And the average weight for babies born in 2024, 7 pounds, 3 ounces. I want to say that one of my kids was 7'3", exactly. And I can't remember if it would have been young Aaron or young Natalie. I think one of them was 7'3", if I remember. I think one was 6'13", and the other was 7'3". Tracy will be laughing at me at home when I get home, because she'll remember this off the back of her hand. But our kids were just kind of right about middle, I think, there. And finally, Happy Joe's is back open at a new Fargo location. Valley News Live with this story. The first day back open is today. And they're doing a little soft open today. Friends and family of those employees are getting some good Happy Joe's pizza and Italian food. So there you go. It's at 2911 45th Street South. So just north of, what would that be? I guess just north of the tavern, kind of down that way, just north of the intersection of 32nd and 45th. That's where they're at, Happy Joe's. Opening soon, very soon. In fact, sort of open today. And that, friends, is a look at some of the stories making headlines here on this Friday afternoon. We call it the 4 o'clock wrap as we go rapid fire catching you up on the busy day. All right, after this, the winner is chicken and the loser is hamburgers. This according to CNBC when assessing what restaurants did well in 2024 and which ones didn't. We'll talk about that coming up next. Stop by Wimmer's Diamonds. They've got the bling for the Christmas stockings. Here we go, fellas. Not sure what to do? Jewelry always works. Go to Wimmer's Facebook page. Check out the holiday gift guide. As if it needed to be any easier to spend money over at Wimmer's, right? It will make the holiday gift buying easy at a price that you'll love. From elegant pendants and classic hoops to stylish bracelets and stackable rings. They've been doing it for more than 100 years. And over those 100 years, jewelry trends have changed, but at Wimmer's, the purpose has remained the same, to hand select the highest quality fine jewelry in the latest styles and trends. They do repairs. They do appraisals as well. Wimmer's Diamonds, you can find them online at wimmersdiamonds.com. But do what you ought to do and go over there and check it out in person. It's way more fun to walk through that shop. Wimmer's Diamonds. All right, 425 here on the Steve Alstrom Show. I just got an email in to the inbox, studio@flagfamily.com, if you want to send one in as well. And I had to chuckle because I was just telling you that Rob Kupek is one of the 9 Minnesota senators that formed the Blue Dog Caucus. And their goal, they say, is to be a balanced, reasonable, practical, objective, and moderate. A bipartisan path forward for all Minnesotans, it might say on their bumper sticker. Well, State Senator Tori Westrum from down Alexandria way just released a statement about this, and I had to laugh. The statement reads as follows. Quote, "The newly formed Blue Dog Caucus should really be called the Lapdog Caucus. Unfortunately, every one of these members obediently followed the will of their caucus and helped pass their extreme partisan agenda these past 2 years. Their voting record shows how they were anything but pragmatic, reasonable, and balanced. This includes supporting out-of-the-mainstream abortion policies with up-to-the-moment-of-birth abortions of babies, crippling mandates on schools, controversial sex changes on minor children without parental consent, and free college health care and driver's licenses for illegal immigrants." And it goes on to talk about, you know, got rid of the whole $19 billion surplus, voted in $10 billion more in taxes and fees. So the Lapdog Caucus, Tori Westrum with the rim shot there. Let's see if I can do this right here, if that'll work. Yeah, there we go. The Lapdog Caucus. So I had to pass that along. I thought that was fairly. And, you know, look, we try to be civil here on this show and try to be respectful, firm but kind. And so I kind of said the same thing. I don't know. If you voted for that paid leave act, you're not moderate. I'm sorry, you're just not. You can say you want to be, and maybe you have turned over a new leaf and you've seen the light and you're going to try better next time. I guess we give people, you know, that kind of opportunity. You know, John Fetterman sure seems a lot more palatable to me today than he did a year ago. So I guess we'll give them a chance, but you're going to have to back this up with more than just a name, because I think Colin Peterson generally was fairly moderate. Now, toward the end, maybe drifted a little further left, but I don't know. I just am going to have to wait to see a little bit more. Okay, so let's talk about winners and losers when it comes to eating out. CNBC with this story today. Basically, they're talking about consumers cut back their restaurant visits this year. There were 26 Chapter 11 bankruptcy filings from restaurant chains, including Red Lobster and TGI Fridays. But the ones that hung in there and did pretty well put out savvy promotions, emphasized value, maybe give you bigger portions, or maybe cut some prices a little bit. Prices for food away from home, which is how the Labor Department people, their fancy way of saying eating out, rose about 3.6% over the last 12 months, on top of all the increases we saw in everything else, right? So they tell you they want inflation to be 2, but everything is like upper 3s, including this. So they say the restaurants that were the winners and losers this year are as follows. Any value restaurant did pretty well. McDonald's put out their $5 combo meal, and that went pretty well there. But if you didn't do that, you saw a tumble in business, because the fast food restaurants lost about 2% of their business from December through October. The winners and losers as far as the kinds of restaurants that did well, like what kind of food they're serving. The winner is chicken, and the loser is burgers. So Chick-fil-A did well in 2024. Raising Cane's, Wingstop, the chicken place here in town is pretty good too, over on 45th, Slim Chickens. It's kind of like a Raising Cane's, but Raising Cane's is very good. We eat there on a fair amount when we go down to the cities. Chick-fil-A is always fantastic. Wingstop, I've not been there. I don't even know if we have a Wingstop. Do we have a Wingstop in town, Addison? Do you know this?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, chicken prices stayed relatively stable this year, so that helped there. And we like our chicken strips. We just kind of do. We're a nation of adults that we have a little bit of kid in us. And I'll raise my hand. I love a good chicken strips basket. The fries are good. Fries have to be good. But at Raising Cane's, they give you that nice kind of Texas toast. I like that. So that's good. KFC, they say, though, has fallen a little bit because competition has intensified. In the loser category, burgers, beef prices have been on the rise. So that means it's been harder to keep beef, the burger prices low there. And those chicken chains are stealing market share from the McDonald's, Wendy's, and the Burger King people there. McDonald's, they say, has long dominated the burger category with 48.8% market share. But the chain saw its grip slip earlier this year as it scared off low-income customers with menu prices. But by October, they had that value meal, and the people were happy at the Golden Arches once again. Then they had the fatal E. coli outbreak linked to the slivered onions and the quarter pounders. And so McDonald's, the franchise itself, says it's going to chip in $165 million to help franchisees and boost marketing efforts. So if anybody on our sales team is listening, get a hold of the local McDonald's because they might get some money to spend locally. They hardly ever do that. And they also brought the McRib back, by the way. I saw that when I went through the drive-thru yesterday. Went to McDonald's on my way back from Grand Rapids there. I do like McDonald's. McDonald's, Burger King, whatever is closest, I'll do it there. So, but it became very hard with the increase in prices on everything and beef prices going up to keep those prices in line. So they say that not only are the chicken people stealing market share, it's getting harder to make an honest buck there because people are watching their prices, and beef prices have gone up a little bit. So you're either your margin goes or you raise your prices and turn off people that way. So a little bit of the pros and cons or the winners and losers from the fast food wars in 2024, courtesy of CNBC. All right, we got a chance right now to check in at the news and weather desk. And when we continue here on the Steve Ahlstrom Show, the drone saga continues. Nobody seems to know what's happening or where these drones have come from, but they do seem to know that we shouldn't worry about it. How can this be? We're going to talk about it coming up next. All right, with so many interesting things in the news cycle to talk about, and trying to focus as much as we can on what's happening here in our own backyard, I haven't really spent much time on the drone story. So I'd like to do a little bit of that today because there's been some good reporting, or at least some good questions being asked about this, which I guess is good reporting. So Larry Kudlow today did a segment on this to lead off his show. And Kudlow on Fox Business runs a show that's generally more about financial markets and inflation and things like that. And there's been a lot of that to talk about this week because a lot of inflation numbers came out, everything looking like things are speeding up as far as the pace of inflation. So today he led with the drone thing. And Nate Foyt is one of the reporters from Fox News Channel. And I want to play a little bit for you and maybe give you a couple of comments here along the way. But this is the latest on DroneGate 2024 today. So Kudlow asks Nate, do you have any answers here for us, Nate, on what exactly is happening with these drones that have been seen? First, it was New Jersey, and now they're saying Pennsylvania, Connecticut, even California. People are seeing all kinds of these unidentified flying objects, but they seem to be drones from what people can tell. So do you have any answers for us on what's going on, Nate?
Well, Larry, I do have details. Unfortunately, I don't have answers, and neither did John Kirby last hour from the White House. He said that President Joe Biden is working very hard on this with his team to try to find some answers, but they don't have any right now. We know that House Speaker Mike Johnson finally had that classified briefing today, waiting to see what comes from that. But we do have plenty of new videos, plenty of drone sightings across the entire country overnight. Take a look at these videos from not only New York and New Jersey, but also Connecticut, Pennsylvania, California. I just got off the phone with the witness in Pennsylvania. She says the drones were out there for hours, moving in all different directions. Some of them were hovering. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy wrote a letter to President Biden, reading in part, quote, "It has become apparent that more resources are needed to fully understand what is behind this activity." A former Maryland governor, Larry Hogan, is among the eyewitnesses now. He posted this video on X, claiming that he saw dozens of what appear to be large drones 25 miles from our nation's capital. Here's Congressman Josh Gottheimer with his assessment of the situation earlier today.
I'm not concerned about any imminent threats to public safety or our national security regarding these drones. The agency is chiefly responsible for monitoring drone activity. They must immediately disclose more information to the public.
Larry, today officials in New York requested the NYPD get involved to support what many think is a lackluster federal response. Senator Richard Blumenthal also requested a briefing from the FAA to learn more as well. Now, Fox News spoke with a drone expert who said that he analyzed hundreds of these videos, and in his opinion, the large drones, the ones that are the size of an SUV, as many people have put it, he says that those are actually planes and that people are mistaken. That would be in line with what the White House and FBI are saying, but the residents and local officials here in New Jersey are now 25 days into this mystery, and they want clearer answers than that. We'll send it back to you, Larry.
Hey, can I just ask you, why is everybody like Josh Gottheimer? I know Josh. He's a good fella, Democrat, but he's a good fella, smart guy. But why is he and John Kirby and President Biden and the Department of Defense, if we don't know who they are or what they are exactly, how do we know they're not a threat? I mean, I'm just curious. I don't personally feel threatened here in this Studio J at Fox, because I know that the floor managers and the camera people will protect me. But what about the rest of the country? That was a joke. What about the rest of the country? How do they know? I'm glad you're laughing at that. There's got to be a laugh here someplace. How do people honestly know that this isn't China, some kind of China spy satellite 2.0 or something worse? How do we know?
We don't know, Larry. It very well could be a foreign adversary. And we've heard lawmakers on both sides of the aisle, from Senator Kirsten Gillibrand. Of course, Congressman Jeff Van Drew earlier this week made headlines when he made that claim about an Iranian mothership off the East Coast. The Pentagon came out and said that's not true. But essentially, to answer your question, the federal authorities are saying there's no evidence to support claims that the drones are dangerous or that they come from a foreign adversary. But then people, including a lot of the local officials here in New Jersey who got briefed on the matter, they came out furious saying, how can you tell the public that there's no threat when you don't even know what these things are?
Mm. All right. One last dumb question. And you're doing great, Nate. We love you for it. There are drones flying over. There are drones flying over LaGuardia Airport, right? I mean, those are the reports. Now, maybe that's not true, but that has been reported by reporters. Maybe you were one of the reporters. Is there enough airspace over LaGuardia, which is not that big, to accommodate drones and airplanes? I know this is a dumb question, but, you know, people are traveling. It is the Christmas holiday season. Is there enough airspace for drones plus planes?
I can tell you that there hasn't been any concern from any officials regarding the airspace over LaGuardia, although there have been reports that some drone sightings, reported drone sightings, have been in the facility. I don't believe that that's something that officials are concerned about regarding safety of a possible collision with planes at LaGuardia specifically, but we'll keep digging into that one for you, Larry.
All right. Well, terrific stuff, Nate Foy. All right, folks, joining me now, New York Congresswoman Claudia Tenney. And we bring in Brett Belokovich, former Army Special Forces officer, and he is the drone expert. What is this, Brett? What is happening here?
Well, Larry, one of the things you said at the opening of the show is that we're the greatest technological power in the world.
Yeah.
But the truth is, we're not anymore. Oh. When it comes to drone technology, we're not. Our military used to dominate the drone airspace. But all this technology now is more accessible than ever, and we've let China lap us because of our archaic laws in the U.S. that have damaged our own domestic drone industry. They're winning the drone race. We need to invest more in this technology fast. And the reason we're having these issues and so many people don't know what's going on is because we haven't made the proper investment in our counter-drone technology and in drone technology space that's needed right now. You know, the Pentagon right now, they're saying, hey, maybe this is manned aircraft. Look, if it was manned aircraft, it's not difficult to ascertain where they came from. They submit flight plans and all this other identifiable information. And that info is not difficult to track. It's public. But the biggest issue here is our government clearly doesn't know what they're doing.
Right.
You know, that's the one fact we can verify. We no longer have control over our airspace. And the lack of adequate response to these drone sightings is allowing a lot of misinformation to spread. Everything now in the sky in New Jersey is a drone. And the government, not just even at the federal level, down to the local and state level, they're all saying many different things that is causing this hysteria, causing this to spread. And it's just a massive danger for what's going on over there. But either way, this is a wake-up call to show that we definitely have some gap in our defenses. And we don't have the sophisticated technology that's out there to help ease the public concerns.
Well, you know, Claudia Tenney, I mean, there's a drone in a movie coming near you, and nobody knows what the hell it is, friend or foe. I mean, if I listen to what Brett just said, okay, and, you know, we know he's the military expert on this, best in the business. How do we know they're not Chinese drones? How do I know that? I remember, you remember, Claudia, we talked about this last year, whenever it was, those Chinese spy satellites coming from Alaska over Montana and the Dakotas. They weren't really intelligence problems. Oops, we said that right until we had to shoot them down off the coast of South Carolina, and it turns out they were spying on us. So how do we know now? How is it possible we don't know anything?
Well, I have to agree with Brett. I mean, we had the Chinese spy balloon, but even before that, we had the hypersonic missile that circled the Earth, and our military didn't even know about it until the Chinese put out a press release. So we are far behind, and that is one of the reasons that President Trump actually created the Space Force, was to invest in this type of, you know, next world technology and the things that we need to keep up with our adversaries. And it's in space. The Space Force just celebrated its fifth anniversary, by the way. And I know that Trump is going to continue to do this. I have the Air Force Research Lab in my backyard. These people would love to see more investment, more technology. But it is inexcusable that our government doesn't know what these drones are. And I don't know how any public official who doesn't know what's going on can get up and say, these are no problem. How do they know?
Right.
Were they in a classified setting?
That's
How do
it.
They know? I mean, I think that's why Americans are legitimately concerned about it and concerned about, you know, the fact that we don't know what's flying around in space.
Yeah, that's 100% right. All right. Break here. When we come back, if you've got something to add to this, I'd love to hear it because I don't know what to do. How did Joe Biden or Kamala get 10 votes in this country? As sloppy as they were with all of this stuff, it's so many things that need to be really good have just fallen apart in this country. Steve Alsham Show continues after this. All right, I've had a couple people that have called and said they didn't want to go on the radio, but just said raise the possibility that it could be military or, you know, whatever, domestic patrols that they're doing as some sort of government operation. Oh, okay, if that's true, you're not doing it right because we shouldn't be able to know. If we, you're not, you don't want to do testing for whatever project you're on and scare the bejeebers out of your people. So they're not doing it very well if that's what they're doing. So that would be an explanation that makes sense. I don't know. I'm just suspicious about it and we need better answers. Hour two next. Hour number two of the Steve Hallstrom Show is coming to you live from our South Fargo studios. And the Steve Hallstrom Studio is built on a solid foundation thanks to our sponsor, Precision Concrete Cutters and Ramjack North. Your home is your greatest asset. Protect it. Go to PCCND.com to learn more. Give us a call. Shoot us an email. Send us a text. You can get in touch with us in a number of different ways here on the program. 701-271-1100 is the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. You can email studio@flagfamily.com or you can text us at 701-237-1100. 1590. Very happy to have you along for the ride here in hour number two of the show, the final hour of the program for the week as we head into the weekend here. Going to talk a little Bison football before we finish up. And my friend Michelle Woodhouse from WPTF Radio in Raleigh, North Carolina, will join us just after 5:30 here in this hour. Michelle and I take turns jumping on each other's shows, and it's fun to hear her perspective. She does what we do out on the East Coast. And I haven't talked to Michelle on the air since the election, so it would be interesting to find out what the kind of the fallout from the election has been, what the reaction, what the vibe is out there. So we'll do all that before we finish up here today. All right, it's time for the top five at five. And these are what I believe to be the five most consequential stories in the news cycle today. It's brought to you by Nancy Kelly Realty. Go online to nancykellyrealty.com and find out more about Colfax Meadows, where small town living is still a thing. All right, let's go here. Story number one. This is a story I talked about a little bit in the first hour of the program. And the story is that a group of neighborhood residents in South Fargo has offered to buy the site of the proposed sex offender treatment facility that is scheduled to be put up in the former Cornerstone Bank building at University and 26th. This group is called the South University Coalition, and they say that they're concerned that this treatment center is way too close to three elementary schools and the YWCA. Back about a month ago, it was reported that the nonprofit group called STAND, which is short for Sex Offender Treatment and Assessment of North Dakota, they bought that location in South Fargo, and that sparked a lot of concern from neighbors. I'm reading from the forum story that does a good job outlining this here. And a spokesperson for the South University Coalition said that we didn't have many options here, and this made sense for us. They said, the STAND people said that, but the South University Coalition says they can take their investment and their money, and if they have to use that for capital improvements at another location, they certainly can. But for us, this is not over until they sell that location, because at any point they could come back into the neighborhood. By the way, the STAND organization has been operating in the state since 2014, and there are five other locations statewide. Hopefully they're not next to elementary schools and YWCAs. Story number two. This is one that, when I read this, it made me mad. A very few stories make me mad. When I read it, this one does. So the woman at the center of the Duke University lacrosse scandal now tells WRAL-TV in Charlotte, North Carolina, that she lied when she accused three players on the Duke University lacrosse team of raping her in 2006. Crystal Mangum is a former exotic dancer, and she has admitted she falsely accused David Evans, Colin Finnerty, and Reed Seligman of raping her. Quote, I testified falsely that they raped me when they didn't, and that was wrong. Gee, do you think? It's the first time she's publicly stated that she lied. When asked why, Mangum said she made up a story that wasn't true because, quote, she wanted validation from people. And she said, it's been on my heart to do a public apology concerning the Duke lacrosse case. I actually lied about the incident to the public, my family, my friends, and God about it, and I'm not proud of it. Mangum initially told Durham police that she was raped, sodomized, and beaten for 30 minutes during the early morning hours of March 14th, 2006, in a bathroom of a home on Buchanan Boulevard, where she performed as an exotic dancer. The house has since been torn down. The attorney who initially brought the charges eventually recused himself from the case, was found guilty of lying about DNA evidence that would have cleared the man. The charges were eventually dismissed, but these men will never fully regain their reputations, right? Because there's going to be some wacko talk show out there where some, well, you remember those Duke boys, right? Those white boys that did this to this black woman. Where does someone go to get their life back, their reputation back. Now, the charges were dismissed, so probably it's not as bad as it could have been. But where's the punishment for her? You know, what we're just supposed to say, oh, well, you know, just let it go. It's a mistake. These stories, they just burn me. Because when people actually do these things, obviously it's a horrific thing. And they should be held to these high standards. But back in the, you know, over the last whatever, the Obama years, the Biden years, the whole Me Too movement, right? I mean, any woman who said anything, oh, we got to take her at her word. Brett Kavanaugh's accuser, oh, yeah. And many times these things are made up or fabricated or whatever. And there's never justice for the people who are dragged through the mud on this. How awful of a situation would that have been for those boys? My word. All right. A new study, story number three, by researchers at a university in Sweden has found the people of faith are not more generous than non-religious people, except when they are donating money because they know about the recipient's religious beliefs. Otherwise, there is no difference. I don't know if there's an agenda for this story. It included Christians, Muslims, atheists in different countries. They surveyed 1,700 people. And there have been other studies that have been out. It says in this particular story, like Pew Research said that highly religious Americans are more likely to donate time, money, or goods to help the poor. So there have been stories out about that. So now this research comes out and says, well, if you take out all of the religious donations, because people find, you know, it's the United Christian Families Foundation or whatever, you know, Salvation Army or whatever, you take that out, the giving isn't that much different. Well, okay, let's think about this for a minute. If you're taking out the donations, yes, many of them are to a church and to proliferate that faith system, yes. But many of those are going to Salvation Army, Churches United, places like that where there's something there. So I think people are going to read this story and say, aha, those Christians, they always say they're so generous. They're so, they're no different than anybody else. Well, first of all, I would say that that still means they gave a lot because whatever they gave outside their religious giving matched the amount the people who were not religious gave to anything. So it's not like they don't give anything. It's just that they're giving probably to their religious causes first and then second of all to things in the community. So they are doing things in the community, just not at a higher level than those who are considered non-religious. I would just again say, the things that we as believers give to are things that do good for people more than just the gospel of Jesus. And the gospel of Jesus obviously changes lives and all that. So it's the best money you ever spend as a believer. So I just thought that was interesting. And it just teaches us or reminds us all over again to read things with a critical eye and think through what you're being told and see, okay, what's the real truth of this story there? Story number four is one I touched on earlier in the program, but the man charged with killing UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson did not have coverage from UnitedHealthcare, which was confirmed by the company late last night. So here we thought, you know, the guy was misdirected because he had a bad surgery, was mad about that, and it was something about, you know, mad about the surgery going wrong. Well, this is the insurance company. Sue the doctor who did the surgery. Well, now we find that the guy wasn't even a customer of UnitedHealthcare, and he shot the CEO. So this guy's completely wacko. And the story makes you madder and madder all the times. Something happened with this kid. He seemed fairly normal up to the last couple of years and then just fell apart. And story number five, this coming from, I don't know what the whole story behind this study is, but I'm going to read it to you because I think it's interesting. Researchers at the University of Michigan have concluded that every time you reach for a Coke, not like the white powdery substance, I'm talking about the can, the red can of beverage. Every time you reach for a Coke, you could be losing 12 minutes of your life. These concerning statistics came after a study of ultra-processed foods. And they say that if you drink a Coke, they don't say Diet Coke, so I think I'm still okay. A Coke, you're going to lose 12 minutes off your life every time. Other foods, which are actually worse, a hot dog. If you eat a hot dog, you're taking 36 minutes off your life. A breakfast sandwich, 13 minutes. Eggs, 13 minutes. Come on now. We've already, eggs are clean. Cheeseburgers, 9 minutes. So, okay, that's better than the Coke, I guess. Bacon, 6 minutes. If you eat fish, you can lengthen your life by 32 minutes. At some point, you have to ask yourself the question, though. If I eat the fish, that's 32 minutes out of my life. I probably spent eating the fish, and that wasn't any fun. And if I live to 90 instead of 91, will it matter all that much? So this ultra-processed foods thing is being quantified a little bit with this study. And those, friends, are what I believe to be the five most, well, today I'll say maybe interesting. I'm not so sure that that was consequential, but it might make you think twice before you reach for a Coke or a hot dog next time. Put them together, that's 48 minutes, for gosh sakes. All right, 518, Steve Hallstrom Show. When we come back, speaking of the UnitedHealthcare story, the head of UnitedHealth says nobody would design a system on purpose like the one we have for health insurance. Telling comments after this. CJ's Tavern at Rose Creek is more than just a bar. It's the perfect place to host your next event. Holiday party, corporate gathering, groom's dinner, watch party, whatever you got going on. When you want to get some people together, think CJ's Tavern. A welcoming atmosphere, lots of space for large or small gatherings, scenic views, and a newly expanded mouthwatering menu. To book your next event, email info@cjsfargo.com. CJ's Tavern, a restaurant, bar, and event center located on the gorgeous Rose Creek Golf Course in South Fargo. Very cool. That is a beautiful place. Really cool spot, no doubt about that. All right, so the CEO of UnitedHealth Group, I want to be clear about this because we thought, well, isn't that the guy who got shot? Well, UnitedHealth is the name of the company, the parent company. UnitedHealthcare is the insurance division of UnitedHealth. And that is the Brian Thompson. He is the guy that got shot. Okay, so before we get into this, I want to make that distinction there. So UnitedHealth CEO Andrew Witty today acknowledged that the U.S. healthcare system is flawed and in need of reform. He said to CNBC, he was on that channel, he said, "We know the health system does not work as well as it should. We understand people's frustrations with it." No, excuse me. He wrote this in a New York Times editorial opinion piece. And this, I think, is really interesting. He says, "No one would design a system like the one we have, and no one did. It's a patchwork built over decades." He said, "We're trying to help make it work better, but we have a long way to go." He said, "We're willing to partner with anybody, healthcare providers, employers, patients, pharmaceutical companies, governments, and others, to find ways to deliver high-quality care and lower costs." The comments were the first ones that Witty has made publicly since last week's fatal shooting of Brian Thompson. UnitedHealthcare is the largest private insurer in the United States. And as you know, Luigi Mangione shot him and killed him. Or at least he's accused of that, right? I mean, I guess we don't know until all the evidence is in, but this is what they think. And the killing has allowed people to dump their bucket about healthcare and, you know, saying horrific things like he had it coming. Hopefully the guy goes and shoots more health insurance executives. So, and as we've talked about now a couple times on this show, UnitedHealthcare wasn't even the guy's insurance company. So I don't know. It was just a crime of convenience or what it is. But I just think it's interesting that this guy is saying no one would ever design a system like the one we have. And no one did. It's a patchwork built over decades. I guess that's true of any system, right? I mean, you do something for decades and sooner or later you're going to have tweaks and adjustments, and pretty soon you kind of get to where you're at now. I just, healthcare and health insurance is such a big thing. Health insurance is not the problem most of the time. Within any system, of course, there's opportunity for, you know, sloppiness and corruption and greed and all of those things. But I've watched over for 10 years as our company has looked at health insurance premiums go up year over year after year. And as much as I don't like it, it makes sense to me. And the increases we're seeing in our premiums, yeah, they are going up, no doubt about it. But for the most part, the system of how you get your claim processed is one that most people can follow. So it's not like I don't know how to file a claim anymore, or if I file one, the whole process has changed on how you file a claim. If you file a claim, the claim will be heard, and I don't know. I don't think I've ever had a claim denied. I guess that happens, and I know that can be controversial and difficult for some people, but I think we understand the whole thing and how it works, and the price increases year after year. As much as I don't like it, I get it. Inflation, wages, all those things make healthcare more expensive, too. It's going to be the same way there. So it's going to be interesting because there's going to be an opportunity for people to say now, okay, well, can we rebuild health insurance? So let's rebuild that and try to make it better. All right, 527 here coming up on 528. We've got a short break for us. When we come back, we've got a interview with my friend Michelle Woodhouse from Raleigh, North Carolina. We're going to talk about what's going on in North Carolina and their reaction out there to what happened in the election. Steve Hallstrom Show continues right after this. Welcome back to the Steve Hallstrom Show. Good to be with you here on this Friday afternoon / Friday evening. And we are flying solo here on the board right now. Addison had to jump across the station to get something else done. And we're juggling a few balls here at the same time, but I think we're doing okay here. And I am glad to be visiting now with a friend of mine that I met at the Republican National Convention, and her name is Michelle Woodhouse, and she is, I like to say, she's a Scott Hannon of North Carolina. So we had a great time getting to know her. Our booth was right next to her booth, and we got to talking, and it was a great time to visit with her. And we've had her on the show a couple times since then, and she's been good enough to give us a few minutes here on this Friday afternoon. Michelle, good afternoon. How are you today? All right, we're having trouble connecting with Michelle, and we have her locked in here. So I'm going to try something else here. And we're going to try to do this input and see if that works better. And we'll try this. Yeah. Michelle, there you are. Hello, my friend.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, doing great, thank you. Sorry for the two-step there, but we're trying to get her done, and we will get the show to the finish line one way or another. But thank you very much for being with us here. And I've kind of done the board and talking a few times, but every time it's kind of a reacquaintance with how things work. So anyway, but thank you for jumping on with us, Michelle. Last time I visited with you, we were talking about the election coming up, and you said, Steve, one way or another, North Carolina will be delivering for Donald Trump, and Republicans will get the job done, and they certainly did. And so congratulations. We didn't know. Your state was one of a number that we thought were going to go the right way, but amazing how the entire proceedings unfolded on election night. How was it for you? Where were you? Were you on the air late? Tell us about election night for you working there in North Carolina.
Yeah, election night in North Carolina, especially for us over here in Western North Carolina where I live, was, it was exciting, but it was also, there was a little trepidation because we were just on the heels of Hurricane Helene causing tremendous devastation to the far west part of Western North Carolina. Our biggest county here, where Asheville is located, didn't have running water for over 2 months. We had so many people who'd been displaced, so many issues that were going on, just making sure that everybody could get to the polls. So there was so much work happening around that. And it was so exciting to see how great President Trump did in North Carolina, and to see at 3:30 in the morning, I feel like we keep repeating that. You know, 2016, it was about 3:30 in the morning. This time, it was about 3:30 in the morning to see him come out on stage celebrating becoming the next president. It was a wonderful night here, and especially, I think, for those of us who had been so impacted by the hurricane devastation, to be able to see things go the right way for us in our state was just such a blessing.
Yeah, Michelle, I think it sort of restored my faith in, like, okay, I'm not completely losing my mind, that we can't, despite some of the early polling with Kamala Harris when she jumped in for Joe Biden, is showing her having a lead over Donald Trump in certain places. And people like you and me were saying, there's no way that America really wants what she offers. And yet the polling said what the polling said. And so we knew it was going to be competitive, and it was relatively competitive. Certainly the Electoral College piled up pretty good on the side of Donald Trump. But in the popular vote, you look at it and it was, you know, 1.9 or 1.8, whatever the difference is. So there were tens of millions of people that voted for Kamala Harris. So I come away from this election feeling obviously happy and optimistic, and it just feels like things are different. But I do still feel somewhat concerned for our country that the election was as close as it was. How about you?
Well, and you know, it's so interesting because I wonder how, of those people that cast their ballot for Kamala Harris, how many of them were really voting for her versus voting against Donald Trump? I think,
true,
that, you know, it's hard, and I don't know that we'll ever know that, but I think to me, one of the indicators that gives me great hope about the common sense that all Americans, I think really the bulk of Americans really see, is you're seeing people like John Fetterman get in behind Elise Stefanik.
Yeah.
It looks like he's going to get in behind other cabinet picks of Donald Trump. You're seeing the mayor of New York City sitting down with Tom Homan talking about, we've got to change these sanctuary city policies. I think the left got so far left with so many woke policies around illegal immigrants and amnesty and the they, them, and transgenderism and boys and girls sports and all of these things that your listeners, just the heart and soul of America, says, this is crazy land.
Yeah.
This is not what we stand for. And I might not like Donald Trump and the things that he says or the way that he says it, but Kamala Harris and her team are completely, completely off the mark in what America is really about. And I'm bewildered that anyone could vote for her. I don't know how you could see any of the few interviews that she did, any of the times that she spoke, which, again, very few times, you could walk away from that thinking this woman could lead the free world. I don't know how anyone could have. Your hatred of Donald Trump must have been so enormous if you went in and thought this is the right direction for our country. And, you know, I'm so thankful to God that more people went in and said Donald Trump's the right choice. More people did that in the key critical swing states. And I think it does say middle America, the heart and soul of America, is truly still grounded in Judeo-Christian values and
yes,
common sense policies.
100%. And doesn't that feel good, Michelle? Because, you know, we kind of thought, right? We kind of figured that there was more people that believe what we did than what we were maybe led to believe along. But it kind of made me take a deep breath and go, thank goodness the country hasn't lost their mind the way I thought maybe it had. So in that respect, doesn't it feel good just to be reminded that, you know, people of faith and common sense people will, if it gets bad enough, they will rise up and do the right thing?
Absolutely. And now I think people are already starting to see right out of the gate, Donald Trump is, you know, he's pretty much the acting president right now. January 20th will come and he'll be sworn in. But you're seeing him stand up and say, why are there drones flying over New Jersey that no one knows about? Why is the Biden administration trying to do a fire sale on the supplies that were bought with my tax dollars and your tax dollars and the tax dollars of your listeners? Why are they trying to do a fire sale on the supplies that were there to build the wall? And I think we're starting to see Trump already stepping into leadership. The cabinet picks are better. He's out of the gates strong. And people are looking to him to do that. They want the country to get back on track. And, you know, he's already taking steps to get it done even before he's in office, as are members of his leadership team.
What are some of the things that have happened here since the election as Donald Trump has sort of aligned his chess pieces for his administration? Maybe things, people he's put in certain places or things he said or indications he's given that you like, and you're watching these things unfold and you say, that is what I have been waiting for. I love to see this happening. I'm so glad this person is going to get a shot at doing this. What kind of things have jumped out to you, Michelle, as things like, I can't wait to see this really happen?
Yeah, every time Tom Homan speaks, I am, you know, I'm just locked in on what he's doing, because he is going to secure the border. He is going to lead the charge on deporting illegal alien criminals that are in our jails, that are perpetrating crimes against our families and our communities. And I love it when some of these kind of woke governors and mayors are saying, well, we are not going to cooperate with these policies. And Tom Homan just says, you know, try us, see how it goes for you. Right. He is so strong. I think he's going to be, he is just, again, hitting the ground running, doing the right things, having the meetings that are necessary. I love to see that. I wanted Pam Bondi as the Attorney General really from the beginning. She is going to be a rock star as Attorney General. And I think we're going to see something really different this time with President Trump, because I would say the two areas that hurt him in his last administration were his attorney generals and his chief of staff. This time he will have, you've got Susie in as chief of staff. You've got Pam Bondi, who should have no problem with confirmation as the attorney general, a man that the left accused of not being around smart women.
Yeah,
let's not
right.
forget what Mark Cuban said, has himself the two of the most critical positions. He has put in incredibly strong women, very bright women, who are going to do the right things. And I think that those are two of the selections I'm the most excited about. And I think another thing that's been really interesting to watch since the victory, it really feels like Kamala Harris has just disappeared.
Yeah, true.
She's absolutely disappeared. And, you know, that has been really kind of interesting to watch her. Will she be there when President Trump is inaugurated on January 20th? I assume that she will. I know that was, I'm sure, very hard for Hillary Clinton to sit up there when it happened in 2016. But, you know, we're watching this administration, I think, continue to implode its final few days. It's unfortunate to see Joe Biden using this time to do these mass clemencies, and the fact that, you know, he pardoned his son when he kept saying that he wouldn't, that, you know, he's done that. Let's watch and see what he does. If there are any more, preemptive pardons that he puts forth, it'll be interesting to see kind of how Joe Biden goes out. But we know the way that Donald Trump is coming in, and he's coming in with strength through peace, surrounding himself with the right people and staying true to the principles that we know that he used for the first 4 years. And these next 4 years, I think, are going to be incredible.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it just feels like the adults are back in the room, I guess is maybe how I might describe it. I can't wait to see how all this unfolds. We're visiting with Michelle Woodhouse from WPTF Radio in Raleigh, North Carolina. We're visiting with her on the Valley Christian Counseling and Wellness phone line. Michelle, if I was asked what I'm most excited about, I would probably say the Department of Governmental Efficiency with Vivek Ramaswamy and Elon Musk, and where they, I think, a couple of people that are business guys, they know how business works, and they know how to say no to an expense. And Washington, D.C. has been full of people that are, you know, diametrically opposed to saying no to spending money on just about anything. And to see these two guys get in there and say, you know, we think we can find a couple $1 trillion worth of expenses to make a difference. I don't know if they can do it. I don't know what power they're going to have to actually make the cuts themselves, what's going to have to go through Congress. I don't know. But, like, never do I remember in my adult life a president coming in and saying, we've got to clean up the P&L and the balance sheet on the federal government, and we got a couple of business guys who have done it that are going to step in and do that. That's what's most exciting about this whole thing to me, because if you don't have financial solvency, you don't have anything, because you don't have a foundation of strength to work from, and you are at the risk of so many things that can happen that just will cut you off at the knees. What about this the Doge boys and this whole effort? What are your thoughts as you've watched and kind of seen this effort get underway?
It is fantastic. Who knew that now everyone's talking about Doge? We're seeing some new locally elected Republicans here in North Carolina putting in their own Doge department.
Oh,
and
okay.
I think this is kind of the new wave that we're going to see in municipalities, in state government. And of course, it's all being led by Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. And could you pick two more perfect men to do what Donald Trump has tasked them
100%
to do? They're perfect for the job. When you hear about the fact that only 3% of federal government workers show up for work, and when you remove the security guards and the custodians that are in the buildings, only 1% of people that are on the federal payroll go into an office.
Mm.
And you and I have both walked the streets of Washington, D.C. There are departments that are an entire block.
Yes.
They're an entire block of the district, and those offices are sitting empty. How great would it be to be a fly on the wall, to be sitting in a one-on-one with Elon Musk or Vivek Ramaswamy, and they're asking some longtime Department of Education employee, so tell me what you did last week.
Yeah, right.
And
right.
All of a sudden, we've got accountability and transparency, and I think that they're going to come in and start making incredible cuts. And thank goodness Republicans have all three branches, because I think it is going to be important. There might be some congressional pushback. But at the end of the day, when 97% of your workforce doesn't go to work, and we're looking down the barrel of hundreds of trillions of dollars in spending, a debt, an interest on the debt that our great-grandchildren are going to face, I think these first 2 years of what they do in the Doge department, it is Americans are going to be so excited to watch it. And the two of them are perfectly suited to do it. What we have heard, I mean, you and I both have been following Trump for this entire kind of cycle since 2015 when he came onto the scene. One of the greatest things to me is people will say, he can't do that. He can't do that. We've never done it that way. You can't do that. Guess what? Donald Trump does it, and he gets it done. And this department, I think, is going to be another example. And as I said, it's cascading down. We have a newly Republican elected auditor here in North Carolina, and he is launching his own Doge in the North Carolina State Auditor's Office. So it's contagious. People love it. I think they're so tired of the government irresponsibility, and Republicans who have been fiscally irresponsible are going to be exposed. As a conservative Republican, I know the Democrats are irresponsible with money, but I'm sick of watching our team be fiscally irresponsible. And this department, I think, is going to hold everybody's feet to the fire, no matter what letter is next to your name.
Yeah, 100% agree. You can't go to Washington, D.C. and not just be overwhelmed with the sheer size of government. And in our company, I'm the CFO here. And even I mean, we run a very tight ship here. But even here, every once in a while, you're like, why do we have that subscription? We haven't used that. Or are we getting enough out of this to keep doing it? We do it in business all the time because of the urgency the business requires. I can only imagine within that massive structure of Washington, D.C., how many subscriptions that we don't use anymore. Like, how many of those are there? And like you said, the employees that, you know, are they really working for us anymore? Are they doing something full time, but we still have them on the payroll and nobody knows because we just have always sent a check to Billy Smith and he's always got that check. So I don't even know where you start and how you tackle going through it all, but I'm really, really intrigued to see what happens. And you're right, Michelle. I think having Donald Trump away for 4 years to kind of step back and reassess, and say, okay, if I had it to do over again, like how many of us would love a do-over on like the biggest thing we've ever done in our life? Donald Trump is getting one. And because of it, I can't wait to see how this all unfolds and what he does on day one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's already day one. After not many hours of sleep, waking up on Wednesday morning, it was a true belief of America is back.
Yeah.
We are back. And I do think in many ways, as heartbroken as I was that President Trump lost to Joe Biden, as bad as I knew 4 years under Joe Biden would be, although I think they've proven to be much worse than any of us could have imagined, it probably in hindsight was the thing that could get Trump to where he is now. And to be able to give him that do-over, to go in and do things better and do things with greater clarity and more streamlined and focus on what the American people value.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about it in your business. Well, we all run our household like a business. I mean, you can't spend money you don't make.
Right.
And you can't just borrow it and print it like the federal government continues to do with no accountability, no responsibility, because those chickens are going to come home to roost eventually. And, you know, 8 to 10 years out, there's going to be a cliff with Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and interest on the debt. This has to be, the freight train has to be stopped.
Yes.
And I think Vivek and Elon Musk are the right ones to do it, and the right ones to do it under the supervision of Donald Trump. And of course, we can't forget the whole idea of making America healthy again. Robert Kennedy, I can't wait.
Same.
I love seeing what he is talking about. It is heartbreaking to me to look at the obesity rates, the type 2 diabetes rates, the high blood pressure that kids have. These are
children.
Kids.
Yes,
it
absolutely.
And we're feeding them garbage. And, you know, it's not just the food that's going into their bodies that's garbage. The information that's going into their heads
that's
is
right
garbage.
Too.
We've got to take care of our children. And I think you saw it, I think, with many moms that voted in this election. They wanted to make America healthy again. They want to stop all of this gender woke DEI nonsense that's being crammed down the throats of their children.
It's got to stop. 100% right.
It's got to stop.
Yeah.
We need to get back to kids learning what a pronoun is,
yeah,
not worrying
that's
about
right.
Their pronouns.
Love it. Michelle, I wish we had all day. We're up against the clock, but thanks so much for making time. Great to visit with you again. Excited to see you at the inauguration coming up in January. It'll be here in 10 minutes, so let's look forward to that. But Merry Christmas to you and your family, and we'll talk again soon.
Absolutely. Merry Christmas to you.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Take care. Michelle Woodhouse from WPTF Radio. Steve Halsham Show continues right after this.
Wrap up the year with a gift to yourself from Luther Family Buick GMC. Snag a jolly good deal on a rugged GMC Sierras or indulge in a luxurious Buick Enclave. Save big with deep discount, 0.9% on many models and payments deferred up to 90 days. We will not be undersold. Don't let the season pass by. Ring in the new year in style with a new ride from Luther Family Buick GMC, corner of I-29 and 32nd Avenue South, Fargo. We are professional grade.
All right, well, that will do it for the Steve Halsham Show here today. And great to be with you, and great to be with Michelle and hear from her. She just has a great way of saying things, right? You can tell why she's great on the radio. She's a ton of fun. We've got coming up tomorrow, we've got NDSU football and NDSU taking on Mercer. Jeff Kolpak says, here's five things to watch. Number one, you got to take a look at Mercer's history. They've got a great football legacy. They've been doing it for a long time there. They started their program in 1892. Mercer, number two, is very good. They are the best rushing defense in the country, giving up just 66 yards a game. So that's worth watching. But a lot of the teams that the Bears played were not running the ball because they were very easy to throw the ball against. So that could have been a part of the deal there. So we'll see what happens there. They've got some award-winning players on their team as well. Two guys with seven interceptions on the year. That's pretty darn good there. They've got a couple of finalists for Player of the Year awards. Cornerback TJ Moore, free safety Miles Redding, the two intercepting guys They're pretty darn good there. Braden Manley, their defensive end, the league's defensive player of the year. And they've got a defensive end named Andrew Zaka, who is a freshman of the year. So they got some really good defensive players there. And the final note from Jeff Kolpak in the forum today of the Bally taking on the SoCon. NDSU is 9-0 against the Southern Conference this year. Although the Bison probably should have lost to East Tennessee. That was a 38-35 game where they had to recover the onside kick late and went on to get the job done as well. So it's going to be a fun one. It's 2:30 tomorrow from the Fargo Dome. So it should be a good time there. And I think that one is on ABC. I think you'll be able to watch that one on regular TV. So there's that break or that there's that opportunity for you there. All right, well, that's going to do it for the show today. Thank you, my friend, for being with me here all week long. Be back again next week as we get ready for a brand new week here on the Steve Holmstrom Show. Got lots of good stuff planned for next week and can't wait to see you then. All right, my friend, you have a great day. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you back here Monday on the Steve Holmstrom Show. Keep on flying that flag, my friend.